up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony.
Well, a very good Friday morning to you, and we are going to have thoughts, analysis, all of that on the two games in the NFL this weekend. The AFC Championship game and the NFC Championship game, with the right to go to the Super Bowl in Las Vegas in 2 weeks. But I told you for the last couple of weeks that this is a really fun time in the NFL because it's the postseason, but there's also a lot of analysis on where teams want to go in the future, and there will be teams that will be looking for new head coaches. And we had a number of them a look for head coaches since the end of the regular season. And yesterday there were two teams that hired head coaches, and they kind of went in a surprising way. First, the Carolina Panthers, that had not been making a lot of news as to who they were bringing in, but it was the same people that most teams were bringing in. Like, they brought in Mike Vrabel to talk, whatnot. But they settled on Tampa Bay offensive coordinator Dave Canales, who was in his first year as a coordinator, but he did some great things with Baker Mayfield. And now he's going to be the head coach at Carolina, hoping that he will do with Bryce Young what he did for Baker Mayfield. Now, this is, again, another young hire, another young offensive coordinator that is going to get a shot at being a head coach in the National Football League. Now, we saw that earlier in the hiring process with Brian Callahan being hired as the head coach of the Tennessee Titans. Now, that's not obviously how it's all gone this year. We have seen Jim Harbaugh come back into the National Football League. But then yesterday there was news about the Atlanta Falcons, who had interviewed Bill Belichick twice and had even brought in Mike Vrabel. And they went with Raheem Morris. Now, Raheem Morris is not a young offensive defensive coordinator that is looking for his first head coaching gig. He's been a head coach. In fact, he's been a head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. He took over on an interim basis in 2020 for Dan Quinn when he was let go. He coached 11 games for them. Previously, he was the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But it doesn't feel like he's like a Mike Vrabel or a Pete Carroll or a Bill Belichick, because he hadn't been a head coach since that 2020 season. They interviewed him for that job when Dan Quinn's vacancy was available and the interim tag had served its purpose, but he didn't get it. Arthur Blank decided to go with Arthur Smith. And Raheem Morris has been the defensive coordinator of the Los Angeles Rams for the past three seasons. So again, it's not quite in the same category as a Brian Callahan or a Dave Canales who are young, up-and-coming coordinators. But it also means that Bill Belichick, in his best landing spot that was on the board for him to become a head coach, is off the table. That the Falcons were wowed by a guy they knew. He had been on Dan Quinn's staff. He had been an interim head coach. He had interviewed before, and they decided to go in that direction. And the Carolina Panthers didn't bother to ask him, probably because that's not a place Belichick wanted to coach anyway, but they did bring in Mike Vrabel. So what's happening here? How do we look at this? Now, again, don't get me wrong. Jim Harbaugh is back in the NFL. The Chargers didn't go with a Ben Johnson. They didn't go with a Mike McDonald. They went with a guy that is coming back into the league after having successfully winning a national championship in Michigan, but more importantly, having success in the National Football League, showing that he had done it before and he could try to do it again for a Chargers team that's got a great quarterback. Is it possible that in 2024, Bill Belichick is not a head coach anywhere? Yeah, it's not only possible, it's very, very likely. The Washington Commanders and the Seattle Seahawks are teams that are still looking for head coaches. Neither one of them are interested in Bill Belichick. Now, we don't know in Belichick's camp if he's even interested in one or both of those opportunities. There has been a connection to Washington because of his affinity for Annapolis, where his dad coached at Navy, but nothing else besides that. Now, what does that mean for Belichick? Well, it's 71 years old. It means that if he's going to be a head coach in the National Football League, he's going to have to be hired in 2025 as a 72-year-old. Now, listen, I'm not for ageism. I hope I work until I don't want to work anymore in this business. But you can also understand why teams are going in certain directions when you do talk to a coach that is 71, or in Pete Carroll's case, 72. How long do you really want to do this? There are rumors that are, rumors are rumors until, you find the truth, that Andy Reid is speculating retirement. That if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, he might retire. Now, these things just float around. Andy Reid doesn't give it any credence because he's not going to say anything while he's prepping his team for the AFC title game. But there's these rumors that float around. He's 66. All right? You get to a point where it is not wrong to ask somebody how long they want to do a job. And in Bill Belichick's case, is it just to get the 15 wins to surpass Don Shula? Or do you have a long-term plan to help us out for not only the immediate future and helping us build to where we want to be, but being the coach of that rebuild to sustain it for a couple of years? Or are you just going to be in here, make some roster decisions up and down the board, and then leave when you get the record and we're stuck trying to figure it out 3 years from now? Now, obviously, if you hire a Brian Callahan in Tennessee or a Dave Canales in Carolina or even a Raheem Morris in Atlanta, that you hit gold, that you hit the right coach, you hit the Kyle Shanahan, the Sean McVay, the Kevin O'Connell, you hit the young coordinator that is going to be the coach for a while, building the team and staying with the team. Now, I don't know what's going on in Atlanta, what went on with Atlanta with Rich McKay, Belichick, whatnot. Reports were there's a reshuffling within the organization in Atlanta, but Belichick is not the kind of guy that wants to answer to a lot of people. He doesn't want to answer to a board of directors. He really just wants to answer to the owner. He's not interested in answering to a GM or a president of football operations or a CEO or whatever that may be. So it's very likely that the Belichick-Atlanta marriage was pretty much doomed from the moment Rich McKay's name was starting to hit the news as an obstacle preventing those two to come together. But the greatest coach of all time couldn't get a job when there were seven openings. Six openings. Now, some of it's on him. He didn't want a complete and utter rebuild like Carolina. He wanted a very talented team, underachieving talented team. And Atlanta was that. They have talent. They got a lot of talent. They're a quarterback away from winning that division. But Belichick's going to be on the sideline now. And I'll be honest with you. I don't know if he'll ever coach again. It's easy to say, oh, no, he will. There'll be openings next year. And maybe the right opening will be next year. Maybe Mike McCarthy wins 12 games and is eliminated in the first round of the playoffs by the New Orleans Saints. And Jerry Jones says that's enough. And the Dallas Cowboy job is open. But in reality, we may have a situation here we don't see Belichick back in this league, where he doesn't pursue the Don Shula's record. And what was interesting, do you remember when Robert Kraft and Belichick were kind of saying goodbye to each other publicly? The way Robert Kraft talked about Belichick, what was one of the things he said in the press conference? They didn't pursue a trade. You know why they didn't pursue a trade? He wanted to give Bill Belichick the opportunity to seek the job he wanted, to seek the opportunity that best suited him, as if he had any control of this whatsoever. But he wasn't wrong at the time. I think a lot of us felt that way. I mean, I joked about why would you even interview Bill Belichick? What's there to interview? If you're Arthur Blank and you keep striking out coach after coach after coach, why wouldn't the first question be you want to start tomorrow? But it is more layered than that. There are some things that as an owner you are considering when you are talking to a guy like him. When you are saying, hey, you know, the success you've had is pretty awesome. But the last couple of years, what exactly went wrong there? Well, you had the greatest quarterback all time, and no one can fault you if you can't find that person. But let's be honest, why couldn't you find someone even comparable? someone even capable. Because we're going to need you to do that here if you want full, complete roster control. You know, it's a legitimate question to ask. But the way Kraft almost presented Belichick, almost on a silver platter to every single person in the NFL that was looking for a head coach, like, here he is, guys. He's great. Don't all line up at once. And it was as if all the owners went, yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll see. Raheem Morris, who, again, players liked, did a good enough job to warrant a second, you know, a second chance with the Atlanta Falcons. He beat out Bill Belichick for this position. Now, again, there's a lot more dynamics than just straight up being a better candidate. But Raheem Morris got the job that almost every single person who was covering the story thought it was inevitable that Arthur Blank and Bill Belichick were going to come together and he was going to be the coach of the Atlanta Falcons. And then once he started losing momentum, the Falcons didn't hesitate. And he hasn't even talked to Washington. He hasn't even talked to Seattle. And those are the only two teams left. It's kind of an interesting shakeup, isn't it? I mean, the idea that the answer was not if Bill Belichick would be coaching, it would be who he was coaching. And now the question really is, will he ever coach in this league again? All right, we're going to get into the playoff games. We'll talk about Raheem Morris and Dave Canales and the right hires. And what are the Seattle Seahawks and the Washington Commanders? Who are they waiting for? We'll touch on that. Plus, again, who's going to Super Bowl 58? Continue.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're coming back as we are getting ready for the NFC Championship game, AFC Championship game as well. Songs with the titles of the teams in some way, shape, or form in the song.
Yes.
This is Kansas City Rock City.
Exactly.
Baltimore Rock City.
San Fran.
San Francisco Rock City. This is like their best song, isn't it? Kiss?
They got, I go back and forth between that one and, the name of the other song's escaping me right
Rock
now.
Rock and Roll All Night?
No.
Party Every Day?
That one's kind of
Made for Loving You?
Keep them coming. That's not it.
Back in the New York Groove? No, that was Ace Frehley's solo album. Beth? Oh, that was Peter Criss's solo album.
Look at you naming all the Kiss bands or Kiss albums.
Yeah, there you go. I tried. Kiss Army, 1978.
Proud card-carrying member.
Yeah.
No, it's God Gave Rock and Roll to Us.
Yeah, that's a good song, too.
I like that one.
But Detroit Rock City, hopefully. I watched yesterday. I'm glad you introduced this song. I am watching. I did not get to finish it last night. I am watching. I don't want to say it's an Amazon documentary. I don't know if Amazon made the documentary, but it's on Amazon Prime. The Barry Sanders documentary. And it's great. It is great.
Is our man Lomas in it?
It is. Lomas is in it a lot.
Yes.
Lomas is highly featured in this documentary. There's a couple of people that are featured well in the documentary. There is actor Jeff Daniels, okay. Detroit native. There's Eminem. He's in the documentary. And then there's SportsCenter guys that covered Barry Sanders and did stuff with Barry Sanders.
Is it surprising to you how much of a Lions fan Eminem is?
Yeah, diehard, man.
I mean, I knew, everyone knows he grew up in Detroit. But I didn't realize, he is, live, ride or die with these Lions.
He knew the past. Like, he knew why they struggled. Like, why was Barry Sanders so good and yet the team couldn't get back into the playoffs? Why did they struggle after losing to Washington in the title game? He was breaking it all down. Like, he was like a Lions historian.
It is, it blows my mind every single time when I see that because, you see celebrities as fans. And a lot of times, I hate to say this about celebrities, but it's true. They kind of jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
And, during the like late 90s, early 2000s, like during Eminem's heyday. I mean, we all knew he came from Detroit, but I never knew he was a Lions fan during that time.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And I haven't gotten to the...
wearing Lions gear.
I didn't finish it, so I'm kind of interested in more... behind the scenes details of the facts that, you know, the resignation, the retirement by fax and all that. But I watched it because I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm going to really dive in and watch this to see we talked to Lomas Brown about this yesterday, which was, you know, all of these other teams, the three other teams that are participating, they've had experience. Their fan base has recent experience of being part of these championship games and part of the Super Bowl. Right. All the other three have recently been to a Super Bowl. Now, the Ravens, it's a little bit longer. I mean, it was Super Bowl 47 and we're going into Super Bowl 58. But Kansas City and San Francisco, they just played against each other a couple of years ago. Right. And Kansas City is the defending champs. But Detroit, the last time they were on this stage was 32 years ago when they played Washington and they got beat pretty handedly by Washington. But when I was talking to them yesterday about, look, I mean, at the time that the Lions went, if you want to go Super Bowl era, it was 1957 was the last time the Lions won a championship. So the Super Bowl era, which started in 1967, they had played 25 Super Bowls. The winner of that game between Detroit and Washington was going to Super Bowl 26. Lions lost. And now they haven't been back in the game with 57 Super Bowls in the books. And so what is it like when you are trying to live your daily life in the city where no matter where you go pick up some bread, take your kids to school, whatever it is, people are losing their minds. People are coming up to you, telling you how much it means to them. Right. It's a little different. I mean, yeah. Will people in Baltimore be excited to see a Ravens player? No one in Kansas City is going to run into a Chiefs player and say, it's old hat. No, everyone's excited, but there is a level of like this urgency of, you know, I may have never experienced it in my lifetime being four quarters away from a Super Bowl, but my dad did, and he was really disappointed, blah, 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 whatever it is. And that's the feeling that comes through in the documentary. When you watch it and the way they set up how the Lion fans were reacting to that championship game, that NFC championship game, and how the city was on fire for the team, and it wasn't a good time for the city of Detroit. They talked about that in the documentary. It was a city that, you know, murder capital of the world, all of that kind of thing. All of the reputations of being a crime-ridden city, but then came unification of their love for the Lions and Barry Sanders, and how much they loved Barry Sanders, and how much that team was, again, four quarters away from going to the Super Bowl. Lomas Brown did say the only consolation from that game was we did lose to the eventual Super Bowl champs, but that's the only thing that they could come up with. So I'm gonna finish it up probably later today, and it's only 90 minutes, so it's not that long.
Is that really? We hear that all the time in sports. Like, at least we lost to the eventual champs.
I think it's
an overplayed cliche.
It's a very overplayed cliche. I have gotten no joy out of that whatsoever.
Doesn't mean you came in second.
Couldn't care less. Like, seriously, no. I have never once gotten any solace in my team losing to the champs. Like, I just go, we lost. We're not playing. I couldn't care less. Because nobody mentions that. Nobody gives you points for that. Like, if you lose an AFC title game and the team wins the Super Bowl, you don't go, we're like the third best team. Nobody thinks of you as a third. Nobody even remembers you played in the game.
Well, except for the Colts did that one time, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Put up the banner of 2014 finalists.
Yeah, finalists, yeah. These banners.
God.
So, yeah, but a very good documentary. And it showed the humility of Barry Sanders, how much he didn't like awards. He didn't like accolades. I didn't know this.
He barely likes talking to people.
I didn't remember this. He was in Japan for a football game with Oklahoma State when they announced the Heisman Trophy. So when Troy Aikman was up for the Heisman Trophy, and they had the ceremony in New York, and they had to have him on closed circuit TV at 3 o'clock in the morning in Tokyo. And that's when so they had to wake him up to tell him to be on this TV. He goes, I was tired. I wanted to go back to bed. I wanted to sleep. I didn't even want to do it. And they show his family. They're in their home watching it on TV and making the announcement. He's in Japan because Oklahoma State didn't think they'd have a candidate for the Heisman Trophy. And they were playing a, playing a bowl game in Japan or whatever it was, a final game in Japan. And he was on closed circuit TV and just cracked a little smile, but that was about it.
That's crazy.
That was about it. Yeah. He didn't want the accolades. He got awards and he just would leave them on the table and he wouldn't take them. And
he's such a bizarre character.
Yeah. Yeah. So very wild.
And arguably probably the greatest running back ever.
Jeff Daniels pointed out, had something. He goes, the cliche had probably been around for a very, very, very long time, but it wasn't until Barry Sanders started handing the football to the ref that you started hearing more and more people say, act like you've been there before. And I thought about that, and I'm like, he's probably right. That line had probably been around for a number of different things, for a number of different circumstances. But once Sanders was handing balls to the officials once he crossed the goal line, you started hearing that all the time.
That's true.
You would see a player celebrate, dance, do something silly, and people didn't like that, they would point to Barry Sanders and like, be like Barry Sanders. Act like you've been there before.
Yeah, because he never celebrated.
It was business. Never did. He even joked. He joked in the documentary saying, he goes, as an older Barry Sanders, he said, well, I should have just talked to Deion Sanders because I can't dance. He goes, I don't have any moves. He goes, I should have talked to Deion. Maybe I could have learned something from him. But he goes, I didn't do it because I didn't have any moves. I just handed the ball. But he also said his dad was a big influence on him. So again, I feel for cities like this. I feel for cities where, you know, tomorrow's not promised to any of us, but in the NFL, success is not really promised to anybody, right? We can look at the Lions and we can say, hey, they're building something awesome. This is great. They've got a great young team. This is going to be great. They're going to be good for years to come. We're not 100% sure. Like, we don't know. We've seen plenty of teams make a move. You think it'll work and you think it'll work, and there's nothing to indicate that the Lions won't be successful next year and the year after, but it's not promised to anybody. And so there's a little desperation here that is going when you go with the Lions against the Niners. Like, this is a really great opportunity for Detroit and their Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery to run against a 49ers run defense. It's not as spectacular as other aspects of their defense. But yeah, just seeing the love for that team and they're on the Lions and being like, and they've never really given us anything. Well, now they've given you something. We'll continue to look at Kansas City, Baltimore. People ask me who I think is going to win the Super Bowl. I want Detroit, but I think it's going to be Baltimore. I'll tell you why coming up next. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
It's the bumper music to honor the Ravens. There you go. Got a wife and kid in Baltimore. Kansas City and Baltimore, AFC title game. That is the start of the championship Sunday, followed by Detroit and San Francisco. So I'm saying, you know, people ask me who I think is going to win the Super Bowl. They always ask me who I want to win the Super Bowl. And I'm a sucker for the story of the Detroit Lions. Why not?
We've
adopted them early with Dan Campbell. We like Dan Campbell, and we kind of were pulling for him last year, so we might as well keep the show's dedication to the Lions.
I think if you're outside the other three cities, you're probably rooting for Detroit.
Yeah. I think Detroit's got there's a lot of sympathy for them, and a lot of it's a feel-good story, or seem to be attracted to feel-good stories. But when I tell people who I think is going to win the Super Bowl, it's Baltimore.
Yeah.
I think Baltimore is the most complete of the teams. Now, that's what I love about these games. They're not done on paper, and Lamar Jackson can throw up all over himself. And like Dak Prescott did against the Packers. And next thing you know, we're watching Kansas City back at the Super Bowl.
Or Patrick Mahomes has another Mahomes day.
Yeah, that's the other problem, is that it's hard to sometimes picture Patrick Mahomes not playing particularly well on these stages, right?
Yeah.
You know, the Buccaneers got to him in the Super Bowl, but for the most part, he plays pretty well in the postseason. Hey, well, it doesn't matter where the Super Bowl, AFC Championship, plays pretty good. Enough.
And like, I know the Buccaneers did get to him. I know the defense was just playing extra that day, but I also wonder if there's a little bit of Mahomes saying, you know, looking across the field and seeing Brady, you know, and like you know, it's like I'm competing against Brady,
maybe
type of thing.
Yeah. I think it was. It could have been a little bit.
He
of that.
Did have that. Wasn't that the game where he had that horizontal throw?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Where, so, that was the game where he ran like 500 yards of like up and downs.
Behind
like,
the line of scrimmage. Yeah,
east and west rather than north and south.
But
yeah,
he was
all over the place.
He did get the highlight, though. So he had that goal for him.
He did. So at least he has that. Only 9 points, though.
Yeah.
And Brady did throw 4 touchdowns. But the Ravens is, look, we were talking earlier about Bill Belichick, right? And saying, look, the Falcons went in another direction and he didn't even interview with anybody else. And is he going to have a chance to be the coach of the Commanders and the Seattle Seahawks? And it's unlikely. Neither one of those, he hasn't interviewed with either one of them, and it doesn't appear that either one of those teams is interested. So why would that be? Well, because there are coaches on these teams that are playing on Sunday that the Seattle Seahawks and the Washington Commanders are interested in. Mike McDonald is one of them, the defensive coordinator of the Ravens. Aaron Glenn of the Detroit Lions is one of them. Ben Johnson of the Detroit Lions is another one that is up for coaching jobs, whose name's been circulating as a possible head coach in the NFL. So those are the things that these teams are sort of waiting on, and they can't do the full interview until after they're done with their playoff run, whether it's going to be this weekend or whether it's going to be in Las Vegas in the Super Bowl. But the Ravens, looking at the Ravens, and it's Lamar Jackson is having an MVP season. That's great. But we've seen quarterbacks sort of shrink a little bit. But I think this defense is, I just think that the receiving issue with Kansas City is not something that just went away. It's something that's still going to plague them. And there is not going to be a lot of separation that these guys are going to get against this secondary. This is an absolutely beast of a coverage defense when you look at the metrics. I mean, it's going to be very difficult for Kansas City to do their Kansas City stuff with the way this defense runs. It's not even so much getting to the edge and getting to the Patrick Mahomes. He can scramble. He's got an ability to get out of that, but he's going to look downfield. He's not going to see a lot of windows open. Now, the one thing I will say is that we talked about this with the Bills game, after the Bills game, which is if you're Kansas City and with Alex Gold as well, how much of the offense is now going to be, hey, how much can we get Isaiah Pacheco involved in the running game? How much can we get Rice involved in the running game? How much are we going to be able to run the ball? But the problem is, to me, and I hate to say it like this, because I think strategy has to be strategy, right? The best strategy to win the game has to be your strategy. But I can't imagine that the way to beat the Ravens, again, who can get to the edge, who can contain the run, but if you want to control the line of scrimmage and whatnot, is to take the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands. I just can't. I can't see that as how Andy Reid is going to devise a way to get the offense going. Right? I mean, I just can't. Like short passes out, you know, short passes to, I don't know, Watson and who I mentioned, Rice, Kelce. I mean, those are always going to be part of the game plan, right? But how much is Isaiah Pacheco going to have to be involved? How much is that going to be something where, and again, he's dealing with an ankle injury, I think, a toe injury, I think. So how much is that going to be the way the Kansas City Chiefs run their offense? I just can't imagine you've got Patrick Mahomes and you're not just going to let him try to beat you the way Patrick Mahomes has beaten a lot of teams in the postseason in his career. And just take it and just go up against that Ravens defense and see if you can exploit it in whatever way you can. But I just think the Ravens are just a little too strong on this one. But the great thing is that, and I think this is a big compliment to Kansas City, is that they did, we talked about this on Monday, which was after the win against the Bills, you said, you know, this is very Brady and Patriots-like, right? A team that had a few deficiencies, a team that didn't feel like the best team, yet came to the playoffs, found a way to win. We saw the Patriots do this a lot. where they weren't always the juggernaut. They weren't always the 14-2 team that was head and shoulders above everybody else. Some years they had to go on the road. Some years they had to go to San Diego and play the Chargers. And some years they had to go to Pittsburgh and play the Steelers. And some years, you know what, you know, you look through the history from early all the way to the very end of Brady Belichick in the playoffs. Not all the games were played in Foxborough under the beautiful confines of Gillette Stadium. And yet they found ways to win. You know, they found ways to win those games, even when they were looking like the weaker team, because there was something missing with them. And when Kansas City beat Buffalo, it brought up those same sort of feelings again. Like, here's Patrick Mahomes. He doesn't have the same offensive weapons as he's had in years past. He still has Travis Kelce, and that's good enough right now. And he still made some things work, and that's good enough right now. And they walked away, and they walked off a field against a team that was desperate to beat them and desperate enough to, you know, to say, hey, we have to get that game in Buffalo. They got that game in Buffalo, and they still couldn't do it. And that is something that is a compliment to Kansas City. So now you've got this Ravens team, and my God, they have the best rushing offense in the NFL, better than anybody, because Lamar Jackson can still use his feet. And Todd Monken has got an offensive system where he can throw now and throw a lot better than he's ever done. And like I said, Mike McDonald and that defense is just continuing pressure, continuing coverage. They could get you on the run. They could beat you in the pass, all of those things. But this is the kind of stuff that Brady would have to run into every now and then too, where just whatever we have to do, you'd go, well, this Patriots team is not going to be capable of. They were capable. And it's the same kind of feeling. Patrick Mahomes is, I hate to use the term, but he is an X factor, because you just don't know how he can look at the game and go, I don't know how we're going to get into that end zone. I don't know what the difference of run to pass is going to look like, but I'm getting this team into that end zone, or I'm getting this team down the field. He knew against Buffalo that they had to score almost every time they had the ball, right? There was not going to be a field position game against the Bills. Both defenses weren't going to be in positions to win it for them, that they were going to have to score on every possession. And the Chiefs have the second best scoring defense in the NFL, and they felt that way. And the Bills brought in some pressure and felt like it was going to be one of those games where it's going to have to go back and forth. That may not be this. That may not be this. The Ravens defense is too good. The Kansas City defense is too good. You might see a little bit of this. Let's play for field position. Let's play. But when you have two dynamic quarterbacks, roll a dice every now and then. Take a chance every now and then. Because I think that is where this game can be won for Kansas City. So I think this is a very intriguing matchup. I love the Lions, and I love the Lions story. The Lions are going to have to play a very, very good football game to beat San Francisco, if San Francisco actually shows up with, like, I don't know, the right cleats or whatever it may be. San Francisco has to push the reset button. If they push the reset button, they can still be beat, but the Lions have to play a very, very good football game to do it. This is very, very... Everything is pointing to the Ravens, everything. But like I've seen in the past, where I've seen teams where it just seems to be pointing to them rather than New England, I see the same sort of thing. I can't discount Belichick and Brady back then, and Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes is carrying that a little bit here. But I hope to God the answer for the Chiefs to beat the Ravens isn't a steady diet of the run game. I think Patrick Mahomes needs to be the creative quarterback that we've seen him be at times, where he's not going down and he's going to scramble and he's going to find somebody on the run, all of those things. And Travis Kelce is going to be a big, big factor if that's the way Kansas City is going to win. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Heading out to San Francisco for the Labor Day weekend.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Well, I got to be honest with you. You've been throwing out some good artists this morning. Little Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah.
Bruce Springsteen, Kiss, to honor the teams in the championship Sunday.
Now it's all downhill from here.
Now it's all you now. I know. This has been very, very good hour of bumper music for the teams. Very nice. Words, the songs that have the word of the city in the lyrics is where we're going with this. Yep. So
sometimes it's a song title, like Detroit Rock City.
Sure.
Or sometimes it's like, you know, just so quick, hey, I'm heading up to San Francisco, and then Jimmy Buffett's coming.
Just
Monday.
A quick little throwaway line, you know, just whatever. But, you know, it's there. So
but
we're
gonna I mean,
do it.
Immediately when I thought San Francisco, I thought of this song.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, got to include it.
So what was your take yesterday of my first thought was Bill Belichick and coaching in the NFL this
that
year.
Was
none.
Yeah. My thought was, you know, we started like towards the tail end of last week, a week ago today, that, you know, what the Falcons might be going in a different direction, but you know what? They're meeting tomorrow. So that's a done deal.
Right.
And then Monday we get in, it's like, you know, it started getting more real. It's like, you know, there's rumors that they're looking differently. They're going a different way. And then I even threw it like, you know, I think I brought it up like in the good, the bad, the dumb this week, where I said there's a inner turmoil between Rich McKay and Arthur Blank about the hiring of Bill Belichick.
Right.
Because Belichick and McKay don't like each other. Then you pointed out very quickly that I was like, well, you know, you're not firing a CEO for a coach.
That's right. Especially a guy that runs more like all of your business and property. Right. Yeah.
You know, he's just not CEO of the Falcons. He's CEO of Arthur Blank Enterprises or whatever
right.
it's called.
Yeah.
And then midweek, you know, we get the more realization. And then yesterday, I mean, it was a shock, but not a shock by the time we got to yesterday's announcement that they are signing Raheem Morris. Right. Wouldn't you say it was a shock, but not a shock?
I wasn't shocked. It felt like Belichick was losing momentum, and it felt like, okay, there's just a point where it doesn't feel like it's coming back to Belichick.
Yeah.
Right? He had the second interview, and there wasn't any movement on it. And then you look at the other teams, and they're like, you know, the Titans, Brian Callahan. And I know Jim Harbaugh, that's a little different. That was kind of that was trajectory to go there, and they wanted him. But you start going, wait, hold on. Like, if you want Bill Belichick, why are we waiting? What's going on? Well, then it started to feel like nothing. So then when they hired Raheem Morris, I'm like, I didn't even know Raheem Morris had a second interview with the Falcons. It had been like, well, they interviewed like 14 people.
Yeah, they interviewed everybody.
But Morris was part of like a group. Bobby Slowick had two interviews with the Falcons. Obviously, Belichick had that. I think the Panthers defensive coordinator, Ervo of Evero, he had two interviews with the Falcons. And Morris. And Morris, again, is going back to Atlanta. He was 4-11. 4-7, I should say, in 11 games as the interim coach. And when he was with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he wasn't all that impressive. He's three seasons. I think he had 17 wins in three seasons with the Bucs. But players liked him. Players liked him. And if you're Arthur Blank, I guess that's half the battle sometimes, is whether or not the players are going to be, hey, look, we, you know, I remember him. Yeah. Or other players around the league are voicing their support for Raheem Morris. All right. There you go. But something went wrong in the Bill Belichick sweepstakes, because he's not going to be coaching. And a lot of that's on him. He wasn't up for every job in the NFL. There were jobs he didn't want, and there were jobs that people didn't want him to have. So he was only up for a handful. But again, as I mentioned earlier this morning, you have Robert Kraft basically giving away Bill Belichick to the rest of the NFL. Like, we're not even wanting compensation for Bill Belichick. We're going to let him go. He can now be free to take a job. He's under contract, but we're parting ways. So we don't want your sixth round pick if you want Bill Belichick. No, Bill is free to take whatever job he wants, if he wants one. And that was the feeling most of us had, which was he's going to be gobbled up in 2 minutes. And he wasn't. He wasn't gobbled up in 2 minutes. And I don't know what he does now. Does he? People have been suggesting that he do TV, that he's better. He did a good job on the NFL Network's features that they had. He's not the same surly guy at the podium. But I don't know, man. I think you take a year off, and if you want to coach again, you polish yourself up and you go back at it in 2025. I don't know. He's not going to be a defensive coordinator somewhere.
No,
he's not going to take that job. No.
He's not going to take a secondary role. I don't see him going to the college game either.
Nope.
You know, if there was a big time university that needed a coach, he's not going to go there.
I think he wants Don Shula's record. So anything that prevent any job that doesn't allow him to get there, he's gonna.
Like
you know.
You pointed out, though, I mean, he's not going. It doesn't look like he's going anywhere. There's only two spots available, unless you know Jerry Jones has an about face or something.
Sure.
There's only two spots that he's going to. I don't know if they bring him back. I don't know.
When you say who, like just the general NFL?
In general NFL.
Yeah.
Because it's the trend right now is let's go younger.
The trend is finding, again, these young coordinators. Dave Canales has 1 year of being a coordinator.
Yeah.
I know he's been in the business, but as a actual coordinator with the title on the business card, he's had 1 year of that. You know, he's been a quarterback's coach. He's worked with Geno Smith and in Seattle with Dan Morgan. One of the reasons Canales got the job in Carolina was Dan Morgan and him had worked together in Seattle for like 7 years. But, you know, Canales was way down on the totem pole of coaches. So, you know, he's been in the NFL a while. He's been in the NFL. He knows the league. But as far as actually running an offense or a defense, it was his first year doing that in Tampa Bay. Did really good for Baker Mayfield. And became the leading candidate. And again, I think if you're Arthur Blank and you're the Atlanta Falcons, you have one situation. If you're Dave Tepper and you're the Carolina Panthers, you have another situation. You have two completely different situations. So I absolutely targeted a young 30-something head coach for Dave Tepper because Pete Carroll ain't going to go work for him. I don't even think Vrabel would have been interested in working for him. He's got a reputation that veteran guys don't want. If you're looking for your first break in the league, you'll put up with it. But I also think they wanted a young offensive-minded guy to work with Bryce Young. They invested a lot in Bryce Young. They gave up the number one pick this year for Bryce Young. So they're going to want a guy that can do wonders with quarterbacks. Geno Smith, Russell Wilson, Baker Mayfield. There was just a couple of guys that he has worked with in the past, his time in Seattle and his time in Tampa. But Arthur Blank was looking for a winner. Like Arthur Blank is like, we're not that far away from being in contention in the division. When he sees Tampa Bay playing in the divisional round against the Lions and playing right up to the Lions, he sees his team. He's like, we're not far from that. Like, the Buccaneers didn't blow everybody away in this division, right? Same thing last year, even though they lost to Dallas. When he saw the Tampa Bay Buccaneers hosting Dallas and hosting Philadelphia with mediocre records, he went, my team isn't far from that. Right? We could have gotten that with one or two more wins. So he's looking at his team in a little different lens. I do need a coach that can find my quarterback. I do need a coach that can get the best out of the talent that I've got here. But I also need a coach that is going to listen to the way we run this operation. And now they've restructured it. There's a whole thing about Rich McKay is out of the football operations, but still CEO of the other entities. Who knows what that actually means for Raheem Morris, who do you still answer to somebody? But Belichick was very likely they were turned off by Belichick, who probably could not get past how the power structure was going to be. And that's the, and but is a 72-year-old Bill Belichick going to be bouncing around the NFL interviewing for head coaching jobs? Because you know what's going to happen next year? There's another Mike McDonald somewhere you haven't heard of yet, right? There's another Dave Canales who you haven't heard of yet. And they're going to be available. There'll be somebody. There always is. I had no idea who Kevin O'Connell was until he became the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. I forgot Kevin O'Connell was the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. That's where this league is right now. The trend is, unless you're Jim Harbaugh and have had 4 years of success with the 49ers, they are not going to the coaching tree of the college game anymore. That has been mostly a proven failure. What they want is coordinators, young, up-and-coming guys. And I'm not saying Mike Vrabel can't get a job. He certainly can. I'm not saying Pete Carroll can't get a job. He certainly can. Same thing with Belichick. But it seems, like you said, the attraction right now is young, bright, innovative, gung-ho, energetic, good with players, relatable to players, coordinator coaches that are getting their first chance. Now, Raheem Morris is sort of in the middle because Raheem Morris has been a head coach in the league before, but he's coming in after 3 years as a coordinator, defensive coordinator with the Rams. So he's sort of somewhere in the middle, where he's not quite Mike Vrabel or Bill Belichick or Pete Carroll, but he's not Dave Canales either.